production some people present here. So I think the team that presents here, sometimes the time when they do present, they will introduce themselves. And later on, we got an apology of the deputy minister that she's also not able to attend to this meeting. And with that, I'll hand over to ICASA, but they'll first introduce themselves. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Katharina Pere, and I'm the acting chairperson. I'm here with my colleagues, Ms. Takamila Pangwana, the chief executive officer, and Ms. Portia Ngamazulu, the acting CFO. ICASA welcomes the opportunity to come to present our results.
The acting DG,
who
still has to present to us the team.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to
stop? The acting DG, then continue.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and colleagues. Mine, Chair, will be to say that we are here as the communications portfolio with the entities who are supposed to be presenting today. I think the colleagues from GCIS has already made the presentation earlier on, led by the DG of GCIS. With me from the DOC, I'm with Mr. Fehima Muremi, who is the Chief Director, Entity Oversight, and Mr. Johannes Rantete, who is assisting with the Entity Oversight branch, Mrs. Paripile, the Chief of Staff in the Minister's Office, and Mr. Lebogile Mokane, who is the Media Liaison Officer for the Minister. I think the entities, as you say, Chair, when they present, they will then introduce their own teams. But we do have the acting chairperson of ICASA, the delegation of ICASA. We do have the chairperson of the MDDA, Ms. Pelisu Nkomo, who's leading the delegation. We also have the colleagues from FPB. Presenting. I'll hand over back to you, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The CEO will, take us through the annual results. The acting CFO will go through the highlights on the financial statements, and I'll just make a few brief comments. I'd like to highlight the fact that ICASA has achieved its third consecutive unqualified audit, given we still have some work to do, which would be a clean audit. And we've sold all of our executive and general management positions during the course of the year. And in terms of the update from, an update from the Auditor General's report, we've since sold 5 of the 6 vacancies that we had in supply chain management, so there's only one outstanding. We've even filled most of our positions that have become vacant during the course of the year, and we're currently finalizing an appointment for the final one, which is the CFO. And ICASA has been able to complete this long-anticipated realignment, which we've reported on many times, as being incomplete. It's finally complete. It was completed by the end of the financial year. I'd also like to point out that in addition to ICASA strategic projects that would form part of our strat plan and the ACP, there are a number of ad hoc matters that we have to deal with on an urgent basis, some of which have included the market consolidation. We've had several transactions in this regard that we've had to deal with. Those were unplanned. Another key project was the review and of the coal termination rates and developing a glide path. That's something else that the CEO would talk to. We've also had to make changes in terms of the amendments emanating from May 2014. ECASA operates in an extremely and increasingly litigious environment, which leaves ECASA open to challenges, and the best mitigation strategy that we have is to be as cautious and in terms of the process as possible, ensuring procedural and administrative fairness, which often results in a substantial amount of litigation. And I think that's something that we could respond to if we so choose. We regulate in the public interest, and in regulating in the public interest and also being cautious of the fact that we're often taken under review, processes often run longer than we anticipate, so they go way beyond the date that's planned, because when people ask for extensions, we have to grant these things so that we're fair and we give everyone an opportunity to participate. Like I said, we've made some changes in terms of the amendments, one of which was we published the Code of Ethics, which we were required to do within the course of the financial year, and we've also began publishing, as of May last year, we've published all regulatory decisions on our website in accordance with the amendments. And during the course of the last financial year, the terms of four councillors came to an end, and the then chairperson's contract ended during the first quarter of the current financial year. I'll hand over to the CEO to take us through the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson and honorable members. As I go through the presentation, part of it is going to be addressing what has happened last year, in the last financial year, but also to brief members about what actions have we taken up to now. The issues that we're going to cover, though I'll cover some of them very briefly, is our organizational mandate, government's priority outcomes, strategic goals for the last financial year, the services that we have provided to the sector, key achievements and areas of non-achievement, the Auditor General's assessment of ECASA's performance, measures to improve that performance, and then I'll conclude. As you know, honorable members and Chairperson, the ECASA is established pursuant to Section 192 of the Constitution and in terms of the ECASA Act of 2000. I won't go into the details of the mandate that we derive from the various acts, the Constitution, the ECASA Act, the EC Act, the Broadcasting Act, the Postal Services Act, and the ECT Act as amended. Now, what we have done in the last financial year was that we looked at the outcomes that government has given us and aligned with the Department of Communications in terms of outcome 6, outcome 12, and outcome 40. And we have specific activities that are related to those outcomes, as outlined in this slide. We had a number of strategic outcomes-oriented goals, 5 of them. One, which was to promote competition with a number of objectives under it. 2, the promotion of a digital agenda, then the promotion of efficient use of spectrum resources, protection of consumers, and modernizing the ECASA. Those were the strategic goals that we focused on, and those were the areas which the Auditor General assessed us on the basis of. ECASA delivers a number of services in the sector. We provide services to licensees, and we also provide services to end users. Now, those services, especially to the licensees, are related to type approval, interconnection and facilities listing, spectrum assignment, licenses and channel authorizations, and the registration certificates for small licenses. On the other hand, we do provide universal service obligations which are done by operators, diversity of local content, quality of service, speedy resolution of complaints, and competitive pricing, which is an issue we focus on. In the regulatory divisions, we have four of them, but actually there's five. The four main divisions that were there last year is licensing and compliance, engineering and technology, markets and competition, and consumer affairs. But we also have regions which deliver services at a regional level. I won't go into the specific activities that are done by each and every division as outlined in the slide. Now, when it comes to programs that we program to, which is licensing and compliance, we had a number of achievements that are related to license transfers and amendments, license registration, and those licenses that I have granted. And there's a huge number of activities. The reason I'm outlining this, Chairperson and honorable members, is purely because the cluster of activities are not just what you see in the strategic plan and as the key objective. It's also a lot of other activities that are taking place as services to the licensees. What we get assessed on by the Auditor General is what we have put in our strategic plan. And from that strategic plan, a judgment is made to the CASA's achievement. What we had not managed to do very well was aligning the operational objectives to those strategic plans so that everything talks to each other. On program two, we also deal with compliance by broadcasting and ECNS licenses and postal services licenses. We did acquire monitoring equipment for broadcasting services on the one hand, and also for postal services. And one of the major achievements last year was the May 2014 elections that took place, and the CASA was part and parcel of that monitoring. On the impact on the sector, I'm on slide number 10 now. What we wanted to highlight is the type of the amount of licenses that you see in South Africa today, both on broadcasting licenses, radio stations, and television. And roughly on community alone, there's 284, as you'll see in the later distribution, and there's 21 commercial licenses. There's 5 television licenses, and then there's the public broadcaster, which has got a number of channels. Then we have got roughly about 502 ECNS, individual ECNS and ECS licenses. Then you've got a huge number of club licenses and those that are licensed at that. And there's 74 unreserved postal services that are providing the services in the sector. This slide, the next slide, is just indicating the distribution of the community air radio station all over South Africa. You see in Limpopo there's 38, 27 in Mpumalanga, 37 in KZN, 53 in Gauteng, in the Free State on the 19 and 36 in the Eastern Cape, 39 in the Western Cape and 9 in the Northern Cape. And there's about 38 in the Northwest. But that's the distribution of community radio station. The engineering and technology division has been focused on quality of service monitoring. We did a lot of those services in Limpopo, Northwest, Northern Cape, and the Free State. We did assist the South African Revenue Services on the request they wanted in terms of network signal in the border post. And we also do monitoring for quality of service monitoring for SASA, in order to assess the quality of those subsidized networks in the rural areas. We have also done a lot of cross-border coordination where we were participating with the minister in resolving issues around in the interference on spillage in the border areas, specifically between the Sudan and South Africa and Mozambique and South Africa. But we also had a number of memorandum of understanding between institutions of higher learning. At the moment, it's between ourselves and his Pretoria University, CSIR, and I think the University of Limpopo, that we've done collaborative research on it. They've helped us in some of the achievements that we've done. Also, Program 3 focuses on spectrum management, spectrum licensing, and equipment type approval. Most of the end-user equipment that you find in the sector is actually type approved by ICASA. It's tested, and we are working with the SAPS in doing some of those activities. Consumer affairs, the market and competition, was working fundamentally on measures to promote fair competition. One of the major achievements was in relation to wholesale call, voice call termination regulation. We do review retail tariffs, and we do assign payer. Last year, it was about 6.2 million numbers that are assigned to operators, and we do an annual price review of postal services. And the impact thereof in the sector, there was fundamentally in prepaid a reduction as a result of a call termination by 52%. On contracts, the reduction was about 26% as a result of the wholesale call termination regulation. Consumer affairs focused on consumer advocacy programs and handling of consumer complaints and resolution thereof. There were a total of about 308 community outreach workshops that were held nationally and 247 community radio interviews that were held. We had a total of about 4,297 consumer complaints, of which about 3,867 were resolved. And this represents roughly a resolution rate of about 90%. We also do participate in a number of national joint activities that are done with the justice and crime prevention cluster. In the presidential inauguration, we do participate in that. We do focus on the SKA. We did participate in the Africa Aerospace and Defense, and then in the State of Nations Address that was held last year. There were a number of areas that we didn't achieve, and some of those areas were related to some of the strategic objectives that we're supposed to achieve. And one of those was the free-to-air, where we had set a target of, we were supposed to have had a closing date in December, and every licensee or applicant asked us to extend the date, which we extended to 31st of March. That's why we couldn't achieve that objective. Some of the things were only finalized in March. However, the issue of issuing invitation to apply for spectrum couldn't be finalized, because part of the problem is that there is a spectrum policy that must be promulgated in order to ensure that that is achieved. We've had delays with the acquisition of the spectrum management software, which is, since 2009, we have not been able to deal with that. And part of it is what the AGS also picked up in relation to our procurement processes, which leave much to be desired, which we are trying to improve. There are other areas like a toll-free framework, which we have not managed to fulfill, but we are on track to actually deal with that this particular year. A highly involved process was done in relation to local content, which the findings were done, a discussion document was published by last year. However, we are not in a position, we are only now developing regulation in relation to that. The same with the universal access to postal services. We had to do a lot of consultation with the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services in order to make sure that it becomes part of the national ICT policy review, the issue of the universal access to postal services. Under the assessment that the AG had done, they did point out a number of things that we had not achieved as an institution. One of them was understanding on conditional grants. Then there was the impairment of National Revenue Fund receivables. That's related to money that is owed in license fees, especially by institutions like the National Defense Force and the South African Police Services, which is a huge amount of money. But it's still an issue that needs to be resolved. Then there's concerns over performance information. And the AG, when they were doing an assessment of ICASA, we couldn't provide the evidence of performance or non-performance, hence there were all those variances. The end result of it is that ICASA performed quite badly, as compared to the previous year where we had about 41% performance. We only achieved six of our 21 targets. But there were also significant non-achievement of performance targets, those that I'm talking about, with the 29%, of which we only achieved 6. And then there's uncertainties in relation to litigation matters. As we know, the sector is actually quite a litigious sector. If people are not happy for one or some other reason, then they take us to court. And one of it, on the other hand, when Vodacom and MTN were unsatisfied with the previous wholesale call termination regulation, they took us to court, then we were given 6 months to actually achieve that. And now we've done the regulation, and the smaller entity itself is taking us to court because they didn't get what they wanted to get. So either way, we lose in terms of litigation. Then there were a number of internal control deficiencies which the institution is dealing with. The administrative program is related to HR, governance, risk and compliance, finance, legal, communications and international relations, information technology and facilities. There's a number of achievements that I won't go into the detail of that slide that we have done. We had to put a number of policies in ICASA related to performance management, talent acquisition, learning and development, rewards and recognition. We had to change the structure of the institution to make it more functional. We had to transform. We are in a culture and change management environment, and that's what we're dealing with under human resources. But it is in the organizational realignment, we had about 356 positions that were redesigned and job evaluated. We revised the salary scales. And we did appoint a number of executives, and our employment equity is still quite okay. I'll move to slide 25. And in slide 25, all I'm pointing out is the number of committees that we have at ICASA, the audit and risk, then the remuneration committee and IT review committee, and then there is the legislative committee, which is the complaints and compliance committee. On the other hand, we have adopted the public sector risk management framework, where we have the internal audit and the audit risk committee. We have the fraud and corruption policies, code of conduct, and health and safety, and environmental issues that we address. I will skip slides in the 6 that deals with governance and attendance of the councillors. As Councillor Pillay has already indicated, we are left with 3 councillors out of the totality of 9 councillors. And then there's the attendance register in relation to governance committees. That's all that we're pointing out in that slide 27. Then the members of the compliance and complaints and compliance committee. Now, I will hand over to the acting CFO to just talk briefly on finance issues, then I'll conclude.
Thank you, Chair. Slide 32 basically indicates the movement year on year on the ICASA baseline. On the left, we're indicating the movement, including the ring-fenced amounts that ever so often Treasury are forced to ask. And on the right is the movement with the ring-fenced included. So slide 33 basically indicates a summary of our financial statements as in the annual financial statement. And we've categorized it in terms of the classification categories. On this one, what we're trying to indicate is we had an understanding of 7.3% if you look to a further plot, laptop. And the other thing we want to highlight is that if you then remove your ring fence project, the total underspending is sitting at 9.5%, which is 36 million. And then on the type of expenditure classification here, you then see that ICASA's majority of its budget is mainly on the compensation of employees at 54.1%. And the budget was at 60%, meaning majority of their funding is spent on compensation of employees. And then on the type of expenditure that we felt were of interest to members, we're on the fruitless and wasteful, and sort of give an indication of the values there. But then, as indicated in the annual report, most of the issues that were under investigation have been concluded, and where employees needed to be charged, they were charged, some were charged criminally. And in the current process, we are actually tracking this fruitless and wasteful to make sure it doesn't become a something that is adopted as normal. So it is an abnormality, and where employees are found wanting, they're actually charged, so that we don't leave it for the AG to tell us that we should have done that. Mm-hmm. Consequence management. Okay? And then slide 34, basically we're indicating the reasons why an organization would sit with internal control issues is that control is legged on four bases. So if you've got capacity constraints, your control will be weak because control has four legs. So if you don't have the capacity to actually make sure you have the segregation of duty, you will then fail. So we then had a capacity constraint facing the organization, which had a negative impact on the delivery of services, but also on enforcing the controls, which then leads to you then having instances of matters, having a lot of compliance issues raised by the AG already. And then the request for rollover funds. Year on year, as you've seen in the previous slide, we have asked National Treasury to provide us with some funds, and we've made a request for some projects that run, you know, over a couple of years to be ring-fenced, and even in the current year, they've actually afforded us that opportunity. But what we're doing differently this year is to make sure that we actually spend the funding in line with the project as approved by National Treasury, as in holding the executives accountable for the spend that they requested initially on a monthly basis and quarterly. And then on the supply chain, which was the biggest issue that the AG has raised, we filled a majority of the vacancies. The one vacancy that still exists is that the person resigned, and now we're in the process of filling that vacancy. And the problem with not filling the vacancies here is the supply chain is a segregation-driven function. If you don't have the people, the right people in that department, your compliance will definitely be flawed. So we're filling the vacancies as and when with the right people and the right skill. But we've also enforced a couple of controls that the AG will be testing in January to see whether it's working before we go into the final audit. So we've also streamlined our procurement processes in such a way that we now track our demand plan and make sure that we actually stand in terms of that plan. And we actually make sure that when we award bids, there is all the required documents attached to each and every bid that is awarded so that we don't come here and say we now have an increase in irregular. And then also our internal audit is now assisting us in making sure that, you know, we do corrective measures before the AG comes on board. So what they then report to us is something that we take seriously and we then address as finance, so that when the AG comes, the internal control environment is far much better than what they found last year. And then we just wanted to address the issue of the use of consultants, because in 2014-15, we spent 32 million on consultants of our grant. That's 8.71%. Okay, all right. And basically on that slide, just explaining why we would use consultants, and that's all.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, some of the issues that I talked about was the remedial measures on the Auditor General's findings on the impairment of national resources. revenue fund receives the calls, we are engaging National Treasury to mediate a dispute with state entities over a non-payment of license fees. Even though part of trying to resolve that is the fact that even if National Treasury gives Defence Force the money to pay, it's more like government paying itself. So that's why we're trying to resolve the issue within the National Treasury to say, what should we do with this money that National Defence Force is owing? Because they don't use Spectra for making profit. They use it for the defense of the country. And that's some of the issues that we have to resolve in order that that finding goes away. Then there were concerns over performance information. We've done a lot to improve in that, in the sense that part of it, we didn't have the person responsible for monitoring and evaluation, which we have done now. And we've done the capacity building through the training of staff. We've linked it to HR and finance systems. We make sure that there's a repository of evidence that is put into ICASA so that when the AG comes around, we can be able to check what is that evidence, where is it, and not find that the Auditor General looks for information and they can't find that information and we say we have achieved or not achieved something. Then we have addressed the internal control deficiencies in that vacancies in finance have been filled and certification of citizens been implemented. We have done a checklist on policies that have been implemented in order to enforce controls. Where there's been issues around the supply chain management, actually that case is with the Hawks, and they are busy. Affidavits have been signed and it's being investigated. Then on the last two slides, overall, honorable members, what I wanted to point out is that whilst we've done a lot of activities within ICASA, in relation to strategic objectives, we've had poor performance across all programs. However, it's a situation which we are literally working to remedy. It's in relation to the way we're structured as an institution. We've improved that, but we've also made sure that we develop for universal broadband provision, we develop a clear framework on your readiness to license the IMD whenever the policy is developed. We do an enormous contribution to social cohesion by making sure that we have got a diverse community broadcasting sector, and we have that effective monitoring. We have resolved most of the complaints that we have received. But we have also facilitated the organizational change management. We have completed the structural realignment. We are busy rolling out new values, behaviors, that's underway. We have changed our value system in order to make sure that it's aligned with the new structure. Our project planning and execution has improved a lot so that we can track each and every activity that the institution is doing. We are busy with business process reengineering for purposes of making sure that all the business units are aligned. And we are also very poor in stakeholder management and engagement. We tended to look from inside outward. We were not putting ourselves in the shoes of the industry and saying, let us behave as people that are outside of ICASA are looking in and saying, what type of activities do you really require? Or what industry? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Members, I think we can engage now with all the presentations that we've done from the morning, and we'll see how far it goes before we leave for lunch. We're going to have to go in the manner that they were presented. I'm going to have to go to the document to refer to which entity you're referring to. Thank you.
sorry, she made an apology because she had constituency emergency that she had to attend to.
Questions?
I actually do have questions, but I just want to get them out there. I'm going to start with ICASA. I'm going to come back with the rest because I'm fresh now with ICASA. When I went right to the, when we went through this presentation, the performance targets measuring to the delivery of outputs and the achievement of the outcome, it shows that 6% of the total 21% targets were not fully achieved. Program 1, government, governance and administration, 84% were not achieved. Program 2, licensing and compliance, of the two, only two of the four targets were achieved. That means 75% targets were not achieved. Program engineering and technology, 100% failure, a reflection. Because of the planned one target that was planned, nothing came of that. Program 4, markets and competition, it also shows there that of the three planned targets, 0% was achieved. Program 5, the consumer affairs, 45% were not achieved. For me, over the last, also over the last three quarters of the financial year, it indicates a massive failure by ICASA. It's interesting for me to see that while there is not delivery, the money was still spent in the budget. I want you to just tell me how you justify that. And then also with taking this into consideration, I want to mention that according to ICASA at this stage, when this, at the time of the printing of the annual report, performance rewards processes was not yet finalized, and apparently the general manager and the markets and competition and the chief financial officer were two of the senior managers that were supposed to be taken in consideration for these performance bonuses. But if you look at the fact that the markets and competition, there was a zero achievement, for what is the bonuses being? And then also, I want to know, I just want to reconfirm the bad debt that is owed, that 93 million, is that, just reconfirm with me who is unable to pay these debts, is it that, that we were just, you can just come back to that, and then also that's concern for me is the unspent conditional grants. What is the reason for this, and what effect does that have on service delivery? It's also, for me, what is also concerning is the fact that 60+% of the budget goes to salaries. It seems to me, if you look at the output or the outcome, the service delivery from ICASA side, it's, for me, it's representing a job creation center instead of service delivery to the taxpayer's money that we use. So if you can just comment on that, then I will vote for the next round.
I want to start with ICASA, but I want to start by commending them for the clean audit for three consecutive years. To me, it's something that we really need to commend as the portfolio committee. It's job well done. But I'll appreciate if they can just try and share with us two issues as raised by the AG. One is the issue of the under expenditure on conditional grant, because really it's an issue that is the concern for us, the issue of under expenditure. It can't be right that when communities need services, but we still find ourselves in this kind of a situation where we can't spend the money that we've been given. Secondly, is the issue of the regular and fruitless expenditure. I think it was also raised by the AG earlier, if they can also as well talk to that particular issue. And lastly, is the issue of consequences for poor performance. What is it that we are doing at the level of the entity to deal with people who are not performing as expected? The GCIS, two issues, congratulations as well for the clean audit. One is in relation to the EASM business that we are conducting as government, be it at national level, provincial level, and at the level of at local level. To what extent do we make sure that we are able to give feedback to communities around the issues that they are raised? And I'm also worried about coordination of this, some of these leasing business, because you find a situation where a leasing business will take place, another one still comes to the same community. People have raised issues and are still waiting for feedback in terms of the issues that they have raised in the past. When we got there, we were told the mayor was here some 3 months or so. The following issues were raised, we don't have answers. And I'm saying, perhaps, I think some suggestion that we made at some stage, that we need to try and do things differently, ensure that at some stage we are then able to go back to communities and say to communities, we were here some 3 months or so, this time around we're not coming for new issues. And this is how far we have gone in terms of the issues that we have raised. And I'm raising this thing because it's an issue that we come across as we move around here. And lastly, I appreciate the fact that after each and every cabinet briefing, as indicated, after each and every cabinet meeting, there is briefing so that people know exactly what is it that has been agreed upon at the level of cabinet. But my question is it happening at provincial level to make sure that exactly what has been agreed at the level of that meeting, those meetings, people know what is expected of them and what are the marching orders in that regard. Let me pause for now, because with AG, I don't want to raise issues that are linked to entities that have not yet presented for now. I want to leave those issues to the entities that are still coming without necessarily talking about the mandate. But I appreciate the work that you are doing in ensuring that all the entities do get clean OD at the start.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I won't raise the issues already raised because I'm covered in that area. Just two issues that I want to raise. When you look at the councillors, you mentioned that six resigned. So I want to know if you performed exit interviews to establish why the resignation and to maybe to resolve the issues in future. Also with regards to the overall performance, which stands at 29%, and you have internal controls, if you look at your quarterly performances, I'm just a little bit worried that if you stand at the end of the financial year at a 29 performance and you've used most of your money, didn't you look at the issues a quarter to say this quarter we didn't manage to reach our target as said. So this is what we're going to do in order to revise that that strategy towards the next quarter. But rather, if you look at the overall performance at the end of the financial year, it leaves, it seems as if there were no interventions being taken throughout the year to remedy the situation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by commending the department and ICASA for dealing with it. But let me start with GCIS. We once requested the department that when you report some very important issues, you should not generalize issues. For example, I heard that there is 8.5% of vacancies. I don't know whether it's 8.5% of what. I will appreciate if you have done, like ICASA, to say that I've got 80 vacant post vacancies. So now we know in terms of figures because of. We cannot go and question you with other issues while we know that your administration is not complete. And I believe even the AG has raised it that if your soldiers on the ground are not complete, then you cannot fight. So tell us why till today, because I believe in every meeting with you, all of you, ICASA and GCIS. Our concern is always about vacant posts. And you should tell us that why they are not filled even today. And are you saying that in 53 million of South Africans, there's no one who qualified to those posts? Or is a clear sabotage to the president? Because remember that in his SONA address, he promised the South Africans employment. But yet today, we will see some vacant posts not filled. Is it deliberate or what? And you can't tell me that you can't fill a post because you don't get a person who qualified for that post. That one, to me, for sure, even my ears will not again want to hear it. Because you wanted to tell me that there are no people in South Africa who can qualify for those positions. So I believe that I wish the minister was here. I believe that we all came here, we will all go to the department to work, not to complain. Make sure that you do what the cabinet and the minister and the portfolio committee wants and the policies also. Number two, thanks for the reduction of the usage of consultants. But we wish that in future, we will never see any consultant in any of our entities. Because I believe that we've got skilled South Africans. And the last one, GCIS. You have skilled many people. Who are those many people and how many? Maybe for sure you should sit down in your workshops and come up with a strategy of reporting. Don't generalize everything. There are many important issues that you're supposed to be specific. I thank you, Chair.
Yes, I just have my GCIS questions also now available. Okay.
Since it is official, so I'm just wondering what is official when you say, okay, there are no seats there. Okay, fine. Welcome to, I didn't see you, I'm sorry. Okay.
Thanks, Chef. Yeah, no, it's true. It's correct that there were no seats. You know, they were all occupied. Yeah, in fact, you know, I will only deal with the ACASA because I was not present in the presentation. For me, obviously, I will not commend the ACASA for clean because my understanding is that this is an unqualified audit report. So that means that there is still a room for improvement. So if we commend you now, that means I'm not sure what we will be commending you for. There is still a room for improvement. It's good that at least you have not gone down, you see, maybe to a qualified audit. But there are just few issues that I want to raise. More especially, without even dwelling too much on what has already been deliberated, more especially on the issue of conditional grant. I don't want have to repeat that, but at least I'm also very keen to understand. But my major problem is on performance information, because my understanding is that performance information will be audited next year, in the next current financial year. So if your performance information is the way it is now, it is really concerning. But I'm not sure because I am listening to your action plan, but I don't see timelines. Maybe you do have timelines for your operational reasons. I don't see them. Your re-engineering of your business processes and whatever, I don't see any timelines that you have put. So that at least we are also sure as we are sitting here that at least you are doing something about that, you see. Uncertainties, obviously, in relation to litigation, they are also very important because they have got to do with, you know, with the existence of the entity. Yeah, because you can be out of the business if those litigation will, you know, will not be known, or in case you may be out of business. Yeah. The committees that you have, your risk fraud, the complaints and the compliance, maybe you can also explain what is it that these committees are doing. Because my understanding is that, you know, you should be measuring, obviously, your performance on a quarterly basis. And then the issues now that have been picked up by AG, more especially on the performance information, are issues that I think at least should have been picked up by you if you were properly, you know, managing the performance. And then the other thing that I want to know is, do you have your e-performance management system? Because the system will also assist you, you see, in dealing with some of these issues. More especially if some of your people, they need to be capacitated, trained, coached, or disciplined, you see. So I don't know about your early warning systems, if they are working properly. Yeah. And what I am saying, it will also, I think, deal with even the issues of your supply chain management. I understand that you are dealing with some of the issues, you are disciplining people, but for me, it's not only about ensuring that people are disciplined. I understand in the event that there is negligence in the performance of duties, or whatever you call it, cross negligence. So those are the issues that are really concerning me, your performance management,
your internal controls, because I don't hear you. I understand that the CEO and the CFO, you have tried to explain, well, you know, what you are doing in order to ensure that these problems they do not, or challenges that do not occur again, but I am not convinced as I'm sitting here. Listen. Yeah, thanks a lot, sir.
Well, two issues that I missed out earlier. One relates to licenses for community radio stations. It's an issue that I thought some of my colleagues will raise, because it's an issue that we have been raising for quite some time. And I'm interested in the strategies that we have for now, going forward in terms of how we're going to deal with this particular issue. And I'm linking this thing to the slide on the distribution of community radio stations, that we are continuing to issue licenses when you know in the long run we'll have challenges in terms of providing the necessary support to some of these community radio stations. So if they can as well try and share with us some of the strategies that we have for now. So many community radio stations that in the long run we have challenges in terms of providing the necessary support, be it infrastructure and a whole range of other issues that and last is on the toll-free framework. How far is that framework? How far are we with that framework? If they can just try and clarify us progress with regard to the toll-free framework. Thank you, Chair.
I also have two questions. Okay, go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Sorry? My hand was up earlier. I didn't have the opportunity to speak. Can I speak now? Sorry?
I say you didn't have the opportunity to speak. You did speak,
maybe
you want to come
again. If I ask if I can come back with my GTI questions.
Yeah, let us know those who didn't speak, then we'll come after that.
Okay.
Okay, come on,
okay, thank you, Chair. Sorry for that, my colleague. It's gone to the side. Okay, just only two questions in GCIA. To break the trend, how does the GCIA intend to make sure that in future it gets unqualified audits without findings? Are there any specific measures in place to turn things around? Okay, let's go to IT. IT support capacity remains a challenge, as the department will not be able to fund additional IT posts and is unable to secure funding for the new IT project. Could you say I should further elaborate on this issue? Thank you, Chair. Sorry about that.
Thanks, Chair, and also thanks for the efficient presentation. My question, Chair, is around the frequency. That issue about 2,972. They also mentioned the cancellation of 2,709, and also there's no indication of where does those applications come from, which province. I just want a clarity on that. Also, what is the limit of application in ICASA? as you stop this application, just to know how many frequencies you're supposed to, I mean, how many applications you're supposed to have, because also you didn't identify yet to say we're supposed to have this number of this application. I just need the explanation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Also, I have a few questions here. I think we'll come back to be the last one. And if we can try and process 80 questions, if we have to come to the restaurant, because they are supposed to leave at 1. I think the process of asking questions, one way or the other, has been covered, because it's about all the entities that are presented here. Just ask you, come back to you, then give the chance to a response.
Okay. I would like to complete my questions before they expire, because I did ask when I started that I just want to come back to my GCI's questions.
That said, let us give a chance to those who did not say as before, then those who are coming for the second and third term will come after this. I've just said this. Mine is also on licenses. That you have distributed 204 for radio stations and 5 for television. When you see that you indicate here the provinces, but we still need to get the municipalities so that when you do oversight, we know that when you go to a particular province, where to go. And on cross-border coordination, we have a serious challenge here of signal spillage and you see, there are meetings between the Sotho, South Africa, and Mozambique. If we can get information as to how many meetings you've had so far, and what are the decisions that were taken, and their progress in as far as implementation is concerned, so that we know if there is progress, and also the time frame. On measures to promote fair competition, you know, for lay people like ourselves in this field, what do they characterize a fair competition? And the consumer complaints, you had 4,297 and 3,087 were resolved. If we can have a breakdown in terms of the quarters that in a certain quarter you had so many complaints, and how long do you take to attend to a complaint and resolve it. In the presentation, we have delayed the procurement processes, and you said from 2009, and also you provide a solution to say procurement process to be completed during 2015-16. But given the rate of vacant posts, do you have capacity to convince us that you are going to improve on the situation? I think the issue of target 2021 has been alluded to, and also given the situation of the vision post as well, one wonders if really you will be able to improve on the achievement of your target. Yes, employment equity is okay. Do you have a certain percentage for disabled people or people living with disabilities when you talk about employment equity? I'm trying to keep those that have been asked by those who came before me. And also said most of the cases were completed. We don't know how many cases were there. You know, I think this one that I just referred to, about the 3,000 and 4,000. That's what I'm talking about here. Okay. Yeah, I'll end up there for now. And if we have anything for AG, let's do this. We'll be the last one, then go to responses. Okay.
My question is on GCIS. I want to know what the cost of the Vukuzenzele government newspaper is, and I'll come to the reason for that now. And I also want to know how you monitor how many are actually read, how many goes to the rural areas. And my reason why I ask this is because There's over 200 grassroots, small independent publications. But if you look at the circulation of the GCLEs, it's 18.7 million copies. But the grassroots publications, and for those who doesn't know what that is, it's small independent, individually owned print publications that mostly circulate in rural and pre-urban areas. And they talk directly to the communication. And the reason I ask this is because 8 million copies per month are distributed, with 25 million readers per month, 79% black ownership. And only 760 more or less of the GCIS ad spend go to these grassroots independent publications. And if we want to uplift and... I was just wondering if we compare the output of the cost of the Vuku Zenzela and we look at what we can achieve with these independent publications, how that compares. That's the one question. And then also the 48 electronic copies of my district. I want to know how many of the actually reach the rural areas and because how many have access to internet. And then you spoke of an app, and I was wondering if there's a cell phone app maybe that will be done for this, my district today. Then there's just a last point on this 272 media bulk buying campaign. I want you to explain that to me, and then also if you will be able to provide me with a list of the various bulk buying, who benefits from this. Thank you.
On AG, thank you, Oliver. But we have a list here of what you do and what you don't do. It really bothers us that you do all of this, and we have in the report here that there are entities who consistently, you know, do not comply with the opinion of the AG. What measures we take if we have that persistent pattern of non-compliance over and over. Every financial year, there's a repeat of the non-compliance.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. On this matter, what we do is that we elevate the conversation right through the year. We have engagements with our entities continuously to make sure that they tighten up on the internal controls. We then raise the matter to the board and the executive authority level. For that reason, we also meet with our ministers, the ministers every quarter to elevate these issues. You would have seen in the presentation, we then require ministers to make commitments so that we track those. And every quarter when we meet, we go back to them to say, we committed on these. For instance, a good example is on the vacancies for MDDA. To say, we committed, you committed on these, on this action, and we would like to report then on progress against that. The second step, the next step that we then do is we present those to the portfolio committee. So, there's no action that the AG can take to institute any disciplinary action. That is the responsibility of management. And then the oversight responsibilities then rest with the executive authority as well as with the portfolio committee. Honourable Chair, we also have issued a little booklet to our chairs, and they are available if you want. Then we can distribute it to the committee as well, on what action should be taken when and by whom. So if there's indicators of fraud indicators, who must take action? If it's action taken by the, or a lack of action taken by the board, who's the next step to take action? So it will help the committee to put some insights into the consequence management. We will ask our parliamentary office to distribute that to the committee.
Thank you for the questions. I'll deal with them, and my colleagues will deal with them here. But
I think I'll start with the performance bonuses. The council took a decision in respect of bonuses. We're cognizant that we can't pay bonuses when we achieve 29%. It's really poor performance. And the concern is that if we were to have paid bonuses, then it would encourage the wrong kind of behavior, which is why we took a decision not to pay. So there was nobody at all that got paid. And one of the members had mentioned two people, absolutely nobody got paid a bonus. So I hope that addresses your question. Then in terms of the budget spend and the 29%, what I did say in my opening remarks was that there are projects that we have on an ad hoc basis that we have to address. And some of these things take considerable resources and considerable time, which means that we have to deviate in some senses from what we have planned to do something else. Two key examples are the ones that we mentioned. One was call termination. That wasn't part of the plan because for the previous financial year, we'd concluded on that by March 31st. And we promulgated the regulation. We were subsequently taken under review, and we were instructed by the court to redo the regulation. That wasn't planned. But we had a court-imposed deadline, so we obviously had to put the necessary resources behind that to be able to comply. So that took time and money and human capital. Another key project that took considerable resources was various consolidation transactions that were brought before the authority. They were the transfer of control. Before the amendment of the ECA last year, we wouldn't ordinarily have seen the transfer of control applications. Those were something, those were transactions that required considerable analysis, time, and resources. So we take the Honourable Member's comment about consultants. Yes, we don't use consultants where it's not necessary. But at the same time, it's not always practically possible to have those resources on a full-time basis at a council for various reasons. Some of it includes the fact that we don't need the resource all the time. Some of it, in some instances, you need a resource with a particular type of skill and particular experience that you couldn't have had if you worked in an organization for you to be able to do something effectively. Call termination was one of those examples. We needed to have two types of modeling done, and you wouldn't need to do that modeling on an ongoing basis. And even if we did have those kinds of resources, we wouldn't have had the capacity, so we would have had to outsource that. It was everybody that was involved in that litigation process did have to get consultants, because it just wasn't possible or practical to have that sort of expertise in-house. I think we're cognizant of some of the feedback from the Auditor General, which obviously didn't just come now, so we are beginning to try to look at that. In some instances, we didn't articulate our targets properly. That and when we reported, you would notice that ours is very clear as achievement and non-achievement, and in some instances, those targets are close to being achieved, but it hasn't been achieved, so of course we can't report it. And that's where my comments come in, that often in our regulatory processes, you have people that request extensions of time for applications, even though we build that in to give people additional time to respond. We're not in the position to reject such an application unless everybody else has, or most people in a particular process don't request an extension and there's only one person and they ask at the last minute and it looks like bad planning and it's not in the best interest of the sector, then we wouldn't ask for an extension. But in the ordinary course, when you ask for such an extension, you have to grant it, and it does have a knock-on effect in terms of planning and resources. I'll give you a simple example. Say, for example, the free-to-air application that we mentioned. The deadline was originally December. the applicants asked for an extension to March. The consequence of that is we can't meet the target. The other consequence is the resources that you would ordinarily have had in other projects are now involved in this project, which means you need to reshuffle resources. It's the same kind of thing we had with market consolidation. So those are some of the challenges that we faced. And yes, we did know quarter on quarter that we were running into problems, but we had to reorganize. And I think it's also reflected from our quarterly performance in terms of some of the things we've reported on. So what we are looking at is, and I know that the CEO and his team have already met with the AG and they've met with various institutions to help us reformulate the targets so that we are able to do what we set out to do. And I think there was also a question that talked about if your performance is so low, how did you spend your money? And that was a question that we also had when the results were presented to us, because that was our concern, how does that happen? But the reality is there's these two projects that I mentioned that were quite intensive, and they did use a lot of resources. So they were unplanned, but we had to pay for them. We had to get the consultants, we had to get the lawyers, the same thing for market consolidation. So I hope that explains some of it. I think the CEO will take the rest and ask.
Thank you, Councillor. Just as an addition, one of the things that the AG pointed out is the alignment of the strategy with the budget. And they've been pointing that out purely because you find strategic objectives that are put there. The institution still conducts its own activities, their operational objectives. Those operational objectives are supposed to be aligned to the strategic objectives. So we do spend because there is activities that are taking place, but there has been that misalignment. That's why you find that we still spend purely because the institution has got a lot of activities. If you recall the presentation that I was making, I was talking about the activities that the institution is actually conducting, which is not in the strategic objective, which the AG then judges. Just to add also on what Councillor Pillay has indicated, the nature of the ICT sector is built on the processes that you conduct to the sector. You have to build a certain level of credibility. As an institution, this ICT sector would actually demand who advised you that you could do such a process, as an example. If you do a wholesale call termination review, you would have to have the Deloitte or the Ernst & Young and most of these consultants in order to build credibility to back you up in doing a particular activity. But those processes, what I wanted to point out, honorable members, are that the regulatory processes take as a minimum 18 months. A resource to do a wholesale call termination. As an example, we did a wholesale call termination last year, finished it in September, published the regulation. The next review is actually in 3 years' time, in 2017. So meaning beginning of 2017, we'll start another review. In between, what is that resource going to be doing in the institution? Nothing. Right. So you find we use consultants in that sense. Then the issue for quickly, there's only one councillor that resigned in January. The rest of the councillors, their terms ended. It was the end of their terms, not that they resigned. Then number of committees that we have, like Audit and Risk Committee, Remuneration Committee, IT Review Committee, those are governance committees. They are required, every institution, especially institutions supporting democracy, are supposed to have those institutions as standing committees. They are meant by outsiders. It's actually independent people that are outside of the councillor, even though you then appoint a councillor to be there. But they help us to make sure that there's proper governance in the institution. The CCC is an ICASA Act mandated type of committee, which is designed to adjudicate disputes between licensees. We have a performance management system at ICASA, and it's actually in the execution of that performance management system that we decided that we're not going to pay bonuses, because on that performance management system, the same with the building of the evidence is one of the problems that the institution found itself in that we now, for instance, institute monthly reporting, quarterly reporting, we need evidence to be posted. When you say you have achieved something, then that evidence must be there. The same with in the performance management system. If somebody says I've performed 4 out of 5, then produce evidence that you have performed 4 out of 5. It's that sort of thing. And our people were not exactly that used to that method of assessment. And it's some of the things that is gradually improving in the institution. Both as we work with the Auditor General's office, we are making sure that all the evidence is kept, all the evidence is put there, and is available all the time. We did a moratorium on the licensing of community radio stations, purely because we started, one, having a problem with the strategy of spectrum not being available. You cannot give somebody a license and then there's no spectrum that's available. Then the second issue is that we're working with the MDDA to create a framework that makes sure that these community radio stations are properly operational, are properly funded. They have all the requisite capabilities in order to function. And that's why we did the moratorium. The TOLFI framework, the intention is to finalize it before the end of the financial year. As you know, historically, on the TOLFI, it's actually a historical issue in the sense that only Telkom was mandated to provide the TOLFI. But actually, TOLFI is somebody pays someone. Yeah, it's not the end user. It ended up resulting in a dispute between Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, and Telkom, because Telkom was providing that and then somebody else charges. That framework was designing it such that it's free right through, at least for the end user. If you phone from a mobile at the present moment, you don't have that facility. It's only Telkom. But the intention is that it will be finished by the end of the financial year, meaning by March 2016. We will provide the details of the meeting, Honorable Chatterton, that were held on a cross-border. But essentially what these meetings are, they require that operators that have got base stations next to the border areas either restrict the power at the base station so that it doesn't go right across the border, or they reconfigure or they change the antenna direction. It's those sort of things that needs to happen in order to ensure that there's no spillage or there's no interference on the other side of the border. But it's a result in that land. It's a meeting between the regulators of the different countries, including the operators that are involved, like Vodacom or MTN, if it's MTN that's resulting in this village, or Econet if it's in Lesotho. That's the essence of it. With the frequencies, when you allocate allocate a frequency, one, if it's available, two, if it's in line with the plan or the frequency spectrum plan, three, if somebody is going to be providing services in a particular area and there's no objection, then you allocate that frequency. Other than that, the reason frequencies get cancelled is either somebody is not using that frequency or is not capable of using that frequency or is no longer in the appropriate plan. That's how these frequencies get cancelled. We don't want people to have a frequency, not use it, but still keep it. Then it's not productive for anybody. That's how this cancellation and issuing of frequencies come about. Yeah, on the people with disability, we'll come back with the information in relation to that. But the other issue that I quickly wanted to indicate in relation to our performance, part of that problem results from either the target is not met or we underestimate the period it's going to take to build a particular process. If you take, for instance, the discussion document on the local content regulations, that process has taken 3 years, but they've been able to compartmentalize it and say, what will we achieve in a year? For instance, what they achieved in a year was a consultation discussion document. That's it. In the following year, they see out of the comments from industry and everything, you then have a findings document. On the third year, you then develop a regulation. It's that sequences that tends not to happen. That results in the AG judges failing. They say, you said you are going to achieve this in a particular time. Have you achieved this? Show evidence. You have not achieved it, then there's no evidence. And it's not achieved. We need, as an institution, we need to literally break down each and every project. That's how some of these problems have actually come about. And that, as an example, we then say, because we are a regulator, we're going to develop a regulation in a year. For instance, for historically disadvantaged persons. The reality is you are not going to develop it in a year. You'll probably consult with CB codes of good practice, you'll have to consult the other legislation, then you have to consult the ICT charters, then you must look at the EC Act. Meaning that we have to break it down and say, what will you produce in a year? Possibly a research paper. In the following year, possibly a consultation with the different departments such that there's alignment on the different legislation. Then on the third year, you can develop the regulation. But the other element that's related to it that we sometimes fail to do is to ask, why are we doing certain things? What do we seek to achieve? If we ask ourselves the right questions, then we can be able to actually put strategic objectives properly. And in that way, you wouldn't have a situation where you have targets, then you don't achieve them. That's the second issue. The third issue is related to just pure processes. What we found, well, at least what I found as a CEO when I got to the ICASA was simply this. We didn't know that there was a mechanism to revise strategic objectives. You do a strategic plan, you put that strategic plan in place, you come and present it in Parliament, then you're stuck with it, whether it's wrong or right. But what if you find that it's not necessary to do a certain thing? How do you revise it? How do you go to the minister and say, no, this was inappropriate in the first place? Then take it through the processes, possibly come back to the committee here and say, we made a mistake in saying we're going to develop 1, 2, 3, and therefore revise it. That's some of the things that we are starting to pick up and we are actually now addressing. For instance, the 2015-2016 APP is being revised and we're tabling it to the minister. And we've said not in a substantive manner that it must come to the committee here, but to be realistic, to say, we're not going to achieve this, we're not going to achieve this, but follow a due process in order to ensure that we're not stuck with targets that are meaningless. And that's one of the problems that we tended to have.
To deal with issues around procurement capacity issues, as you know that the annual report you're presenting is for 14-15 financial year. Subsequent to that, we have actually filled the vacancies in supply chain. So there is capacity in supply chain to ensure that we deal with the compliance and control issues as raised by the AG in the previous year. And then on the issue of the split on the bed debt, the 93 million, majority of that is the South African National Defence Force and the South African Police Services that makes up the majority of that bed debt. But then we can provide you with the detail because some of them are smaller radio stations that subsequently could not pay for their license fees. Okay? And then on the unspent conditional grant, you'll notice that on the slides that were provided, somewhere in the middle, I did indicate under the financial statements that your budget is actually 50% of ICASA's budget is compensation of employees. So as part of their realignment process, what they did is that they actually looked at the industry and said, what is the industry paying and where is ICASA sitting, and found that they're actually sitting above the baseline and sort of had to come down, because if you're the norm is that 30% of your total budget must be for compensation. If it's above, then you're sort of spending majority of your money on paying salaries, which is the case they are at. So they've come up with a couple of, litigation to try and address that issue, in that they've revised the pay scale to make sure that it's in line with the market, which also will start to have some sort of a slowback in a way that over time you get to a point where you are realigning yourself. But then that leaves then the variance for your OPEX and your CAPEX. So if they haven't achieved 29% of their targets as an organization, so it makes sense that then they wouldn't spend. If you look at the strategic projects, they were sitting at 9.74% of that budget. So they didn't do that because they deviated and did other projects. But because those were already tabled to Treasury as part of your demand plan, when Treasury afforded you the money, you were going a particular direction, right? So you didn't spend on that one. You actually took out of your OPEX to then deliver on that. So that's why you then sit with an understanding, because you then couldn't actually deliver on the project that we had initially committed to delivering on the variance there. And then... And then on another note is also to indicate that when you're then working from a budget benchmark of 60% of compensation of employees, you then have to look at your industry comparative to say other service organization, what would be an average? A normal company will sit with about 30% as their normal salary bill. A service organization will be a little bit more than that. But 60% is a bit high. Why am I re-emphasizing that? Is that if they had a bigger pool for OPEX and CAPEX and they didn't spend that, that would be then a different question. Because if you're spending 60% on compensation, those people then have to have facilities that they require, so your OPEX is then in line with that. So it makes sense that you see them together. Hence, on the slide, I actually put them together to try and make it better for the members. Yeah. Thank you.
Just to point out one thing. We said we'd come back to you on the employment equity, but you'd also asked various questions on the complaints and you wanted details. Can we come back to you on that as well? Oh, no.
Sorry.
We'll come back on those detailed answers because it's just not that easy to answer this right now. Thank you.
Chair, thank you for the questions. And again, I think there were 10 more quite insightful. Can I propose that what we do is that the first two questions, the one that related to feedback to communities through the use in BISO, as well as the questions relating to briefings from provincial legislatures, Ms. Lekhwabe will tackle those. I think we need to give a little bit more time to the thinking around Buku Zenzele as a product, as well as our strategy to develop additional electronic products, so the app for my district today, and I'd like Mr. Maluka to handle that. I'll tackle four of the questions. The issue of the vacancies, the 8.5% vacancies of posts. I think if we recall in October, November last year, what actually happened was that we put a moratorium on posts because we were trying to establish the form and the nature of the new DOC. It was only after we had concluded the strategic planning processes for the two departments as well as all of the entities that we were able to determine what level of staffing was necessary for the two departments as they have subsequently become in the new financial year. Once we were clear on the structure of the two departments, we then had the opportunity to look at the budgets that had been allocated to us by the National Treasury. So the budget process, the strategic planning process, the definition of what the roles of those two departments should be played a major, major role in the level that you see there. But I think the point that I want to make in closing on that issue is that in the actual annual report itself, if you go to page 70 to 74, we have presented a series of tables. The table is titled the Human Resources Oversight Statistics, and they go down into the level of detail that the Honorable Member has requested, where we look at how many employees, where the vacancies are, what the levels are of those vacancies. So it is detailed in the in our annual report. But just to set the context, we did go through a period where we had a moratorium because we were establishing a new department. I want to touch on training as well. I think it's important to talk about this one. There are two levels of training that the GCIS does. Firstly, there's the internal training. Because we have stated that the organization is a service excellence organization, we focus a lot on skills development. Now, in the annual report on pages 96 and 97, we have a table in there which offers a detailed breakdown, again, in terms of who has been trained specifically in the organization and at what levels, what gender, and so on. It's captured in the annual report. But you've raised an important issue about how we capture training that we provide to the system as a whole. And I think this is something that we can bring to the portfolio committee when we do our quarterly report. Because actually, we offer training at three levels. There's the training that we provide for the executive, which tends to be more in the space of media engagement training, as well as an orientation of the government communication system and how to maximize the opportunities that we've created in that system. There's the national training. And at the national level, the focus has really been on establishing communities of professional practice. So when DDG Lekhwabe touched on the Government Communicators Forum, it's precisely that level where you have professionals sharing best practices and benchmarking across the government system. What we also do is we provide training for internal communicators because we think it's as important as the communication that that is facing consumers and citizens, So there's a forum that looks at internal communications as well as a provincial communicators forum, so that the work that we do is aligned through all the three spheres. I wanted to touch on underfunding of IT projects, and just to give a context to what it is that that we are referring to there. Now, if circumstances were different and the economy was in a different space, I would say that definitely this is an area of risk, given the funding that we have currently allocated to IT. But we're a very disciplined organization. IT really is the backbone of the GCIS. I will say, if you have an organization that is set up in the way that ours is, where it's decentralized, you're running in 9 provinces, and you have an additional office that is operating out of the parliamentary precinct, it's critical then that you build the infrastructure and you make sure that that infrastructure remains as modern as we can possibly afford. And affordability has been the major issue for us. So in your oversight visit, when you came through to visit City Mukeso House, we took you on a tour and we showed you the third floor, and we demonstrated the projects that we have delayed in our IT procurement that relate specifically to communication. So we put on hold the finalization of the television studios. We did not conclude the one radio broadcast studio, precisely because we understand that we are working within a constrained environment. But having said that, we also understand that the effect of IT, if properly applied, can actually lead to cost savings. So we're always looking, we're always in the market to see which technologies that we can adopt that can allow us to operate in a more efficient and effective way. But from an audit perspective, IT for us is one of the areas that is well managed, not only from a financial perspective, but also from a security perspective. The last question that relates to maintaining clean audits, I think I want to also say that clean audits don't happen overnight. It's actually a journey. It's taken us several years to get to this point. But we are starting to understand that if you want to maintain the status of a clean audit, it has a lot to do with the culture of the organization. So, the AG has pointed out that you must build strong internal control systems. You need to keep a close eye on how you run supply chain management. But as important is that your financial management policies, as well as having an independent internal audit competence in your organization, are critical components to making sure that you are able to maintain your clean audit. So in our instance, the chief audit executive reports into the DG's office directly. He's empowered to ask the right questions, to make the probing interventions to make sure that the organization is healthy. I do want to say that my own view is that the portfolio committee has a role in ensuring that organizations, departments, entities have clean audits. And it's in this space of oversight where we are expecting that you should be robust and interrogate our performance. Yes, we would expect that of you at every quarter, but those oversight visits are critical, because I think it's in that context that you can help us to strengthen our audit processes. Ms. Lokhabe, I think you can tackle the first two. Mr. Maluka, if you can deal with Vukuzenzele, as well as our strategy for applications.
Thanks, Donald. Thanks, honourable members, for the question. Issues of SMB, just to indicate that every time we issue, let's say, for instance, soon and very soon, we are going to be having an INBISO focus week all the time, every time we issue directives around even diesel focus, even diesel focus week or even diesel itself, we also send out the guidelines. In about 2009, we worked out together with COCTA, with the presidency, with GCIS COCTA and the presidency, and there were some other few departments. We worked out a detailed guidelines on using diesel generally. Those included even the intergovernmental coordination, because there is nothing as frustrating, and that's what municipalities would always say, nothing as frustrating as having Minister A coming to, let's say, for instance, take new, only to find that 2 weeks or a month or two ago, the provincial leadership had been there. And in some cases, you find that two or three ministers also go to the same area. So some of the guidelines, amongst others, include issues of coordination. Not only that, the guidelines also talk about issues of intergovernmental coordination, because actually in the beginning it used to be rife and worse that you find that a national minister goes to an area without even sometimes closing loop with the province and the municipality, or if they do, giving them very short notices to do that. So the guidelines talk about that. But the other important thing about the guidelines was saying to say that when you go to an area, please, when you start engaging with the public, just start by giving feedback on the issues that were raised. We do know that when you go to a community, the public doesn't care whether you're Minister of Water or Minister of Agriculture or Minister of or whatever. And the public does not even differentiate between national, provincial and local. They see government as government. And when you go there, they will say to you, we want, and they throw that to Minister Faith many times. They raise issues that have got to do with water and the like, even if it's not her portfolio. We have developed an electronic system that is meant to assist in capturing that information and also make sure that when ministers go to those to these even these, they refer some of the issues to the relevant portfolio. It's something that we're working on. It's something that we hope to perfect, and it's something that we are trying to actually get right. We're not 100% there, but it's something that we continually work on. One of the things that we say all the time, and I must say, I must also indicate that in January, during the cabinet Lokotla, we coordinated a report for the president on the imbigo of the political principles for the last 6 months. There were more than 770 events that took place. And in it, even before, the president had also given advice to the ministers to say, please, when you go there, start by raising issues that were raised before. And it's something that they are trying. So it's work in progress, but we have actually conscientized political principles about that. But the other thing that we are doing is that we have encouraged our provincial and local officers working with the municipalities to say that there should be periodical reporting to the public, to say the mayor or the mayoral councillor or whatever, the local councillor, they must always go to the public and say, you remember president was in, let's take for argument's sake, Eerste-Rus, in, I think, August, the president was in Eerste-Rus. And I remember Mayor Ramkopa in Swane, as well as Premier Makura in Gauteng, did indicate that they will go back and check progress and give feedback to the public. So it's something that we are continuously working on, because we know that it is important to do that. And also, there's a big risk of people getting irritated with things that are being raised and raised and raised and are not being addressed. The issue of, so this question coordination as well as issues of feedback. Earlier on, there was also the question about the post-cabinet media briefings. Just to indicate to the members that last year, after we have developed the National Communication Strategic Framework, we went to the provinces, municipalities, and as well as the department. One of the elements that was in that strategy was to say that consistency is critical and is important. At national government level, without fail, as I indicated, post-cabinet briefings or statements, we are encouraging provinces and municipalities to do that. It's something that we are developing. It's something that we want to entrench. It's something that we've put in the strategy, in our communication strategy and in the framework. The application varies. There are those that would, there are those that would not. I must say, at the provincial level, is not as matured and as solid as it is at national level. But there are those that would do it, and some of them are not doing it. They would even do it maybe within a month. They'll make sure that the provincial executive reports back and the like. But I must say, it's not, and it's something that we have actually, we are trying to institutionalize. The question of my district today is an electronic newsletter that is meant for intermediaries. It's not meant for the public. It's actually meant for political principals, the leaders in the leadership in the NGOs. We give it to the CDWs, we give it to the business, we give it to stakeholders. It's a stakeholder engagement. It's a stakeholder publication, not necessarily a public publication. And what we do with it, we just want to make the leadership or the intermediaries aware of what are some of the things that government is doing at the local level. And the beauty of that the publication is not government speaking. It's actually stories and testimonials from the public about how they are receiving government. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks very much. I'll be very quick, just on specific issues. One is that I think we must state it categorically clear that when government established Vukuzenzele newspaper itself, it was meant to bridge the information gap between those people who don't have access to mainstream media, but at the same time to establish its own voice in the public space. So therefore, we will continue to print Vukuzenzele. We only print 1.7 million copies and there are 53 million citizens in this country, and we would want to make sure that our voice gets there. When we were presenting earlier on, I also indicated that we do conduct scientific research. And in that scientific research, people of South Africa say they want to hear from government directly, and therefore they want that unmediated communication, and we view that in very serious light. On the issue of media buying, our media buying, those 200 and over 270 something campaigns are coming from different departments, and they will vary as to where we advertise based on who they would want to reach and which areas they would want to go. It does not necessarily mean that if there's a particular advert, that advert must be in every newspaper, every television, every radio station, every community radio station, and so on. So that is highly dependent on that. As part and parcel of our media buying strategy, we are also quite conscious of the fact that we have to support alternative media, but at the same time, emerging media. And in that strategy, in that amount that you have seen that we have reported in the previous financial year, we have given about 38 million to community media. And if we break it down to, we gave it about to the community radio stations about 20 million, to television about 10 million, and to print about 7.5 million. And in that, I want to emphasize that it is dependent of where we go and whether we've got capability. Also, part of the challenges that we would have with community media that I think members are aware of It also has to do with the fact that if the department says they want to have an event tomorrow in Nkuangua in Limpopo, if the newspaper in Limpopo is going to be printed in 2 weeks, there's no point in us advertising in that particular newspaper. So there are those particular challenges, but I'm mindful of time, Chair. I could go in deeper into some of those particular issues, but we are also working with them, trying to establish, to assist them to establish what we call provincial hubs that can assist in the spread of how they can be able to get advertising and so on. But we also continue to make the call to them, all the community media, that their sustainability is not dependent on government alone. It's also dependent on private sector, but government has a fundamental role to play in ensuring that there's media diversity and that the community media, including alternative media, is supported. Thank you very much.
But this includes, I think, to assure Honorable Van Dijk that we do have the information. We have a 120-page report that looks specifically at this area of media buying. And if the portfolio committee indulges us, we would like nothing more than to bring the report here. We would like to share it with you. The amount from that advertising budget, 38 million rand actually was allocated to investing in community media. So we think it's substantive, but this is probably not the time to discuss that, and we'd like to come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable, for raising the concerns you have raised, and also like to thank those who responded. And moving forward, we think we'll do things better. And we have to applaud ICASA for not paying out the performance bonus when we have such a poor performance in other areas, and also applaud where we have improved. And it is noted that there are most of the entities. Consequence management is not implemented, hence a repeat of non-compliance in many areas. And we are noting that and hope that moving forward we are going to improve, and consequence management will be implemented so the people will improve in the different areas of deployment. And understanding, surely we all understand that it is not a savings, neither is it a surplus, but it compromises service delivery. If you plan and it is not deliver, you cannot say that it's a spending and not a saving. And one of the members saying is that the DG saying that it is difficult to, you know, get a clean audit or whatever, but I think if you follow what is required by legislation, you will definitely reach that a clean audit. Especially appointment of competent incumbent, because sometimes there's a problem where people saying people did not implement as required because they do not have the capacity or the incompetence. And the question I think lies with those who recommend such people, because they do not just put themselves into the department. Someone somewhere from the panel of interviews did make a recommendation. So I think in future, we also must see the world and say, how come there's a, you know, recommended such people who are not competent. And the last one, I think, is that one of being compliant and see that as an achievement. So for me, I'm not so sure if you submit a report within the required time frame, by legislation, then say that it's compliance for me, compliance. But we do have a key achievement that we really applaud you on this. And there is from CIS, Nine Forums Annam that we held, and you held five forums. And the reason being that is the budget. GCIS does not have a budget to pay for them. The sponsorship for four forums could not be secured. Now the question is about planning. Because when you plan on the basis of capacity and budget. You cannot just plan for 9 pages when you know that the budget cannot be adjusted.
But we think that in future we do things better. Be informed of what we have and be honest to ourselves. If we cannot achieve 9 budgets when we have this amount of budget or this level of capacity. With a few words, I think we'll break for lunch and also have other students after lunch. So trying to manage time so that tomorrow we don't have many presentations. If we can cooperate on this one. Thank you very much.
Thank you.